this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Y'allitics. Guess who's not here today? Wheeler, another vacation. This guy takes, I've worked for Y'allitics and our corporate parent a lot longer than Wheeler has. He gets so much more time off than I do. How he does that, I don't know. But this is his second week off this month. So you have yours truly here. This episode is one that I actually think he'd want to take part in, because this is something we've talked about kind of, you know, in our brainstorming meetings for a while now. It's about anxiety and politics. And there has been a lot of that lately. There's been a lot of it for the past decade, it seems like, even longer than that, some people would say. But let me read a stat out to you. And this is not from some obscure journal like Wheeler likes. And he didn't give me this stat. I actually found this one. In May, a couple of months ago, the American Psychiatric Association did a brand new poll and found that 73% of adults in the country are anxious about the November election. 4 years ago, the number was 70%. Fast forward to today, 73%. These are Democrats, these are Republicans, these are independents, these are everybody. And the only thing that outpaced the November election as far as anxiety goes for adults is the economy. That was 77%. So here we are, 4 months away from the November election. Campaigns, along with the news coverage that they generate, are really going to ramp up around Labor Day once everyone gets back from summer vacation. And that's when things are really going to kick into high gear. So today we're going to talk about anxiety and politics. Our guest today, Dr. Brad Schwall. We just found out we're neighbors here.
Absolutely. This is an awesome place, neighborhood for sure. So that's great.
Indeed. So I didn't say where we were, but let me introduce Dr. Schwall here first. He's the president and CEO of the Center for Integrative Counseling and Psychology. There are 45 therapists and psychologists in 23 offices around North Texas and Central Texas that he works with. This is not a brand new organization by any means. It's been around since 1968.
That's right. Been around a long time.
Let's tell our listeners and our viewers where we are, though. This place is brand new in our neighborhood here.
Absolutely.
It's called Jacquval, like Jack of All Trades, but J-A-Q-U-V-A-L. Jacquval is a little brew house in the Bishop Arts area.
Yeah.
This place has been open 7 months. They have a whole bunch of new breweries here. The vibe to me is really kind of Dutch, kind of the Netherlands.
Yeah, for sure, old world.
Definitely, definitely Europe. What are you having today, man?
Well, this is the Bishop Arts Lager. I am a little bit jealous of yours. You got the Napoleon Bonaparte, Pilsner.
A Pilsner, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I always like the lighter. And when she said that was lighter, I should know
better. That looks lighter. And I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah.
But I like mine. And it's amazing that it's all brewed right here.
Yeah, which is incredible.
So very cool.
Cheers.
Cheers to you. Thank you.
Thanks for coming down, and we appreciate that. Uh-huh. You know, let's talk about anxiety here. There's always been anxiety around elections, but it feels different right now.
It does. So there is so much discord, polarization, and our therapists actually do hear from clients that there is anxiousness, and there's more research even by the American Psychiatric Association that even studies where people are watching campaign events or the news where there is a lot of different opinions, and it creates anxiety. And so for sure, elections, we always do hear that. But now, with the bombardment of social media, with seeing so many difficult conversations about difficult topics, it definitely is impacting us.
So you guys have actually had calls from clients who are stressed out about politics?
When our clients definitely bring it up in sessions. I mean, they're talking about relationships, they're talking about differences of opinion. You know, all of it is based on what people really care about and what they believe. So when people see what's happening, they're naturally going to be concerned. And, you know, in therapy, I mean, everything in our lives is interrelated. And so it definitely does come up, you know, everywhere from relationships, from how we navigate differences of opinions, to whenever we see instability around us, it does lead to uncertainty in our personal lives.
And that uncertainty, I guess, is at the core of what drives anxiety.
Absolutely.
So humans need to know what's next, what's around the corner.
Yes, yes. Anxiety is often is about that fear of the future, you know, and actually the counter to that, the antidote, focus on the moment. But when we don't know what's going to happen, that is what leads to anxiousness. Now, true anxiety is when our fear is disproportionate to what's really happening, but certainly the unease of seeing what's happening, of seeing violence, of seeing disagreements, does impact our well-being.
Well, let's dive into some of this here. Yeah. This is a therapy session. I'll give you the Y'all Took's credit card here in just a minute.
Yeah.
But let's talk about it. You got Biden's age. You have, Trump's talk of being a dictator on day one, potential political violence, the attempted assassination of Trump that we saw recently. They all take a toll. But on the one hand, I feel like, and a lot of people probably feel like, they need to keep up with what's going on.
Yes.
And what's happening day to day, but they don't want to be consumed by it.
Yes.
How do you do that?
Yes. We do watch our media intake, and we watch our media sources. And so it is about time. It is about focus, making sure that we are well-rounded in what we are watching and listening to. You know, part of the problem is we are desensitized. So we might see an event and we may not be focused on loss of life or people who have opinions and care about a topic. So there is some depersonalization, desensitization. So I think we need to monitor, to kind of have a good diet related to what we watch and see, but then also really think, research, be thoughtful about what we're hearing as well.
So don't just go to the usual sources that might reinforce your own opinions. Try to seek out some other stuff,
sure.
Maybe more down the middle.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, the goal is to put things in context. And you know, when we think about society, culture, community, family, the individual, it's the micro to the macro. And so by reflecting on how the macro does impact our day-to-day lives, for sure, but also focus on what we can control. So some of that research into the impact of watching politics, it showed that when people were seeking out information from broad resources, that people were actually more likely to be involved in their communities and to volunteer and to be a part of impacting the communities around them. So by bringing it down to what's around us, what we can control, what we can influence, and making a positive impact, then that also helps in our managing and mitigating the impact of what's happening at a societal level.
You mentioned social media. I'm convinced that social media, cable news, talk radio are three of the things that have radicalized a lot of people on both sides and that drive a lot of probably stress in a lot of families and relationships. But when I was looking into this and digging a little deeper into some of the psychiatric background, some of the things I saw were read more than you watch.
Right, right.
Is that something you've heard?
I would see that being that in a written article, there's more information and more context. When we're seeing the media, we're seeing sound bites. And, you know, we also need to think about how our teens and college-age students are getting their news. So I heard somebody the other day say they heard about what happened over the weekend from TikTok. So certainly,
that's some depth right there, huh?
So certainly, media is about sound bites, quick information, reading naturally. There would be more information that you're able to gather and get context from. So absolutely, I think watching what that source is can impact how we're viewing everything happening.
And does the visuals on the screen, whether it's a, you know, red breaking news, the noise, does all that help drive some of these problems for people as opposed to sitting in a room on your sofa scrolling through the New York Times or Washington Post or Wall Street Journal?
Yes, I think extended exposure to coverage, and it is traumatic to see violence, certainly, but even protests. even language that depersonifies people, depersonalizes people. So absolutely, that extended, that exposure does create stress. When we think about it, when we're in a room, we have a natural, visceral response when somebody's having an argument. And it's actually it's biochemical, but it's also physical that we get defensive when we see or hear something that is difficult. And with violence and gun violence and the attempted assassination, it's surreal. And sometimes it doesn't seem real. But being hit with the reality of death, of loss of life, is difficult and impacts us. So I think it is what we watch and what we see. Seeking to read and gather context, but it is also talking thoughtfully in a safe environment with others we trust, too.
So people might be listening to this saying, you know what, Dr. Schwall, that's fantastic, but what do you read? What do you do? How do you make sure that you limit your intake so you don't get overwhelmed with the crisis of the day or the crisis of the hour?
Yes. So, you know, my lens always is mental health and well-being. When I am seeking information, I am attempting and seeking to find the best information possible and seeking to also see all perspectives. And again, the political process is different than even how we make a decision as a family. So I do tend to see that difference in what's happening in politics. What is the rhetoric? What is the message? What is the goal? And there are strategies being taken that are beyond just what I have in a personal relationship with someone. And so I will say that when I view it in our therapist at the center, we have beliefs and we care, but I always have a lens to the individual, to the person, to how decisions are impacting a specific family. So paying attention to politics is important. At the same time, I just have to admit, my lens is a little bit more, I care about you talking about your kids. I want to talk about that, you know.
So if I come to one of your offices, I presume you don't have cable news in the lobby while I wait?
We do not. We have jazz.
Does that help the process?
Yeah, I don't know. No, I make sure we have nice music playing because something to be relaxing.
But I've read that people should maybe even make appointments during the day to consume news, to read the latest from the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, or Yolitics, or any of these places. Have you heard that? Does that make sense in today's 24/7 society, that when I stop at a stoplight, I might want to see what the latest thing is
yes.
on my phone?
So you're saying maybe kind of structure it so that
do
you
people
take
do
time.
That? Yeah.
I don't know if they do. I think typically we are doing that scrolling.
Sure.
And it might be at that red light. But I do think being intentional about it and, you know, even at restaurants, what's on the screen, I do believe in creating an environment that's calm. And so somebody watching the news all day long, that noise of that and all that is being reported on would be difficult. So therefore, I think it's a great tip to be more structured, to kind of schedule time when you're going to focus in on what's happening. Again, got to watch, got to be informed, got to know, but we want to be intentional about it so it doesn't eke into every single part of our lives.
I've heard a lot of people talk about self-care. Our mutual friend, my former colleague, Sonia Zod, is like the expert, I think, in self-care. She does a lot of yoga. I don't do yoga. I probably should. But what does self-care look like for the regular dad, the regular mom that's out there trying to go to work, get home, make sure the kids are fed, taken care of, but they also want to know what's going on out there, but they don't want to be driven off a cliff.
Yeah. So Sonia would be happy, I am saying, that breath work, you know. But we do need to take care of the physical self.
I don't know what that looks like, though.
What that looks like, exercise, healthy diet, sleep, I'm not a health expert, I'm a mental health expert, but there's no doubt that not getting enough sleep leads to irritability. There's no doubt that even our gut health, and there's much research about that. So taking care of ourselves physically is so key. When we exercise, that increases and boosts the chemicals that help us to feel good, and it reduces those chemicals that lead us to be stressful. The second part of it is good support. Everybody needs good, healthy connection. It looks different for different people. Some people have lots of friends. Some people have good, solid, close friendships. But that's good for well-being, but also when we're facing a difficulty. We need people we can be ourselves with, we can be open with. So taking it to politics, we need to have people where we can safely say, I struggle with what's happening. So those two keys, that support, taking care of ourselves physically. I, of course, am going to say counseling is helpful.
Sure.
The purpose of counseling is to have somebody outside ourselves to help us think and process what's happening in our life. It's not about believing what they believe or doing what they say to do. We're being empowered to step back and reflect. And so counseling, when somebody is dealing with depression or anxiety or added stress, gives us the chance to step back, to look, to have a third party who's objective, help us to navigate what is happening.
And you've had people come to you who are concerned about the state of politics today.
Absolutely. They are concerned because they may have certain beliefs, and they're concerned about what will happen and those beliefs not being followed. They are concerned because seeing the discord or the uncertainty creates anxiety for them. They are bringing in and talking about relationships where there's a family gathering and there's differences of opinion, and how do we manage that?
Yeah.
So, you know, in the therapy room, we can't separate it out.
I was going to ask you about family issues a little later, but let me ask you about it now. You brought it up a couple times here. Politics and for more than a decade has fractured families. One of my colleagues, Tanya Iser, talks about early on, one of our first episodes of Yolitics, talks about how she's had issues with her family and how they believe a certain way, she believes a different way, and they don't talk.
Yes.
Can you heal those? Because I don't see, should you attempt to heal those right now? Because I don't see things settling down for a while politically.
Right. So when we're thinking about that type of conflict, the most difficult, maybe impossible human skill that AI never will be able to resolve is the ability to understand the perspective of another. So, and that boils down to deciding what we want for dinner, deciding how to, you know, where we want to send our kid to school, whatever it might be. So understanding and respecting the perspective of another is one of the most difficult skills as human beings. So in our families, though, we must seek to do our best to understand and boil it down to the actual issues at hand. And it's okay to have opinions, but in the end, respect that we do have different opinions. One thing that happens is we project onto people what we believe they are and think by how they identify politically, socioculturally.
So if someone's a Republican or Democrat, you automatically presume they are the worst of the worst.
Yes. So in our families, we do have the privilege of trying to understand them at a much deeper level. Now, it is hard when we're watching TV, but as families, it is easier to understand their perspective. The difficulty is that everybody has opinions, and those opinions matter to them, and they're about serious issues. There's values, there's religious beliefs, there's experience from their personal lives, and we're never going to be able to put ourselves completely in someone's shoes. Right down the street on Davis one day, I was walking by and just happened to start talking to somebody, and that's what's nice about this neighborhood is people talk. They interact,
sure.
You know, in our where we live and where we hang out. And it was just interesting talking to this individual because we went right into talking about differences in experience, where we grew up, what's been surrounding us. So in our families, we do have that benefit of understanding that more. In the end, though, we have to respect that everybody does have different opinions, and the best way to relate is to seek to understand those as much as possible. Now, at the government level, you know, that's easier said than done.
Sure.
You know, so I, that's where as a counselor, you know, I'm kind of focused a little differently, you know.
As a counselor or in counseling sessions right now, would you, and I get every case is different, but would you suggest that people consider trying to rekindle those relationships that, that people may have with very good friends or with family members that they have lost to politics?
Yes, I would. Now, I saw Tanya earlier. She said that y'all brought her wine, not beer. But I,
so just, sounds about right.
Know, but right. But I happened to see her this morning. I think seeking reconciliation, always important. It does take everybody involved to do that. Mm. And I've been doing this work for 30 years. And I know that there are those times when somebody may not be as willing to put aside differences and really relate at an intentional way. So I say seek to reconcile, but I'm also realistic to understand that it does take everybody being involved in that. You know, I think by maybe having guidelines for what we talk about when we're together, maybe reading a shared article and discussing points in that article, so there's kind of a focus. Encouraging everyone to really share, you know, how do you feel when you see this, or what is your hope for how our world can get along together? So kind of by shifting the conversation a little bit, maybe that can help. But then again, we're not close to any major holidays, but we'll be there before we know it.
We will be soon.
We will be, and I've done interviews about that topic, you know. But setting some guidelines before we go into that gathering, doing our best to respond, not react. And that often is what gets us in most trouble, is when we hear something and we're quick to retort back, or we're listening and all we're thinking about is our own opinion and not really what they're saying. So sure. That gets us into trouble in so many ways.
You bring that up. I was at a family reunion recently, and the people in charge of the family reunion know that different parts of the family are on different ideological sides of the spectrum. So the instruction on the way in was leave all politics at the door. We're not getting involved in that. This is family, and happy to report that everyone did that, and it turned out well. But you said something that made me think, the reaction that people have when something is said, something is seen. How do you know your triggers and identify them and be able to stop them from something you might say or do?
Yes. So you're talking about awareness. The word trigger is, you know, we use that a lot, but awareness of what does lead us to be defensive and reactive. Usually defensiveness is about feeling like we aren't heard. There can be also opinions that are shared in a way that are condescending. That would lead us to be reactive. And so, yes, awareness of what leads us to react, and that can be the content of what is said, the tone of what is said, and in therapy we do talk about being non-anxious in the presence of anxiousness, and we talk about removing ourselves a little bit and observing what's happening. So kind of taking ourselves in the moment and listening and kind of analyzing in a way that is a little bit more meta than to getting sucked into the moment. But absolutely, you go into that time with family and you're thinking, all right, what's going to get me going? And I'm going to avoid that. And we teach this to kids too. What are you going to do? What are you going to say? You know, how are you going to change the topic? How are you going to say, hey, you know, I don't really feel like talking about that now. I know it's stuff we care about. So kind of having some tools or even a script of what to do in responding.
That's stepping back and reflecting in the moment, though. That seems pretty challenging to do when
yes.
you're in the moment, right?
Yeah.
Why, that's what you offer, I guess, is tools to do that?
Yeah. It is very difficult, but that is a lot of what therapy is about. It is the ability to analyze, understand, discern. As it's happening in real time. And another part of that, too, though, is that also helps us to assert our thoughts, our beliefs, our feelings, you know. So there's nothing wrong with sharing what we're experiencing, But when we react and either attack back or defend, we're not going to be heard. Mm. So it's not about just letting, you know, anybody say anything. It's about being aware so that you can intentionally respond. But there's nothing wrong with setting boundaries and asserting, hey, when I hear you say this, it sounds like it's an attack on me, and I don't want to have that type of conversation. So those are some I statements.
See, that's good language, because I don't think a lot of people probably say how they feel in these moments. Instead, it's like, no, you're the idiot because you believe X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
So that's good advice to step back and reflect, like you're talking about, to actually do that.
I think we put that in context. A debate is not going to have that kind of language.
Yeah.
You know, and so understanding that difference, there's political speeches, debates, rhetoric, that is different from a person-to-person conversation. So understanding that can help us to avoid emulating, you know, what we see.
Gotcha. Preparing for this episode, one thing that I came across, in addition to, you know, reading the news, maybe rather than listening to it or watching it, is engage in activism. By actually participating in something, that gives you some control over what you believe and some thing in your mind that tells you, hey, you are making a difference.
Absolutely. So many different ways that people can volunteer to help others, whether it be churches, nonprofits, faith communities, whether it be gathering communities. In our neighborhood, we have all kinds of events and activities where people are able to just spend time together. So I do believe that we can talk about our opinions, we can be concerned about what's happening, but it is another thing to walk our talk and do things that really do make a difference in people's lives. And that's everything from at a restaurant, actually talking to the server and respecting the server, at the grocery store, having a conversation, making eye contact, being respectful in the workplace. I mean, so how can we impact our immediate world, our immediate sphere of influence, to me is an antidote for the uncertainty and the discord that we may see.
I feel like you're saying that I'm not very respectful to Wheeler sometimes here. Are you sending me some subliminal messages here?
I think it is fantastic banter. So nothing wrong with a little fun in jest.
You know this all too well. We have grown a lot more comfortable, fortunately, talking about mental health.
Yeah.
Does that mean more people are seeking it now for handling the everyday problems?
Yes. It's a combination. One, anxiety has increased. Statistics, particularly adolescents, young adults, we are seeing more incidents of anxiety. Two, we are more comfortable talking about it. So it is coming up more often, and that gives people the freedom and the safety to talk about it more. And counselors at our center, we're asked to do talks all the time, and that's because people they see it being talked about and they want to talk about it. As far as getting help goes, there still is a stigma, you know, about getting help, but the fact that more people are realizing, hey, I need help, and then we're seeing, hey, it seems okay to talk about it, yes, there is that. Now, we have to work on accessibility. Our center, we see those who have resources, those with insurance. We break down stigma in those communities by talking about mental health and educating about mental health. But there are so many communities that don't have access, that don't have the insurance coverage needed to get counseling, that don't have the physical access, the transportation, the immediate access close to where they live or where they work. So access to mental health care is a huge issue. That's a big part of what the center does, is to find ways to have partnerships, to raise dollars, raise money that can help us get that help to everyone.
To spread it out.
Yeah, because mental health challenges know no zip code. It doesn't matter what our socioeconomic situation is. It impacts all of us. And so we're helping everybody. Those with resources, we're also hoping, you know, they can help in making it accessible to those who don't have those resources.
Well, let's take a quick left turn and we'll come right back. But we do have some lawmakers that listen to this. We do have state lawmakers. And the state legislature this past session, legislative session, they spend a lot of money on mental health care, mm-hmm. mainly building new hospitals and putting mental health care resources in parts of the state that just don't have it. What else should the state legislature be doing right now, do you think, to help people get access?
Yes. So important to assess those who don't have that access and what does need to happen there. Awareness, much research about the cost added to government when we don't address mental
health.
Such
as what?
ER visits. So if we don't have in communities good, steady, strong mental health care, there's more likely to going to be an ER visit. And we at the center work with healthcare systems to deal with that issue. So if somebody is not being treated for mental health issues, they're more likely to go to an ER, which costs money. They're more likely to miss work, which impacts business. So there definitely is a financial connection between taking care of the mental health of the community and how we manage funds as businesses as and the government as well.
Do you see that, though, ever getting to a point where lawmakers say, okay, good point, let's, you know, not have a loss of productivity, let's not waste money on these ER visits when we can address this ahead of time. There's going to be a $18 billion extra surplus this year. What would you tell lawmakers they need to spend some of that money on in Austin?
I would say we find ways for quality delivery of mental health care, pinpointing communities that we see have less access and more need. So I believe that by investing in programs, services related to education and counseling, and it's okay to make it efficient. Education can do a lot. Short-term therapy can do a lot, but mental health impacts so many areas of our lives. I believe we must be creative. It can be public-private partnerships. Everybody has different views of how mental health needs to be addressed in the schools, but we can't get around the fact that kids are coming to schools with mental health challenges. And that impacts their education. So we've got to find solutions. So my encouragement would be assess, problem solve, and then support good solutions. Because if we don't, it is having a financial impact. And certainly the well-being of everyone has such an impact in so many areas.
Let me bring it back to a couple last questions about mental health care and anxiety in the November election. You mentioned that there are a lot more younger folks who need mental health care right now, who have anxiety. I just don't remember that growing up in the 1970s. I don't remember feeling that stress. I mean, maybe I was about, war with the Soviet Union, but I don't remember that. What's causing it now for younger people?
Yes. Social media, we are seeing more and more, and there's some data proving that. So that fear of missing out, that seeing images that we can't live up to, relying on that interaction more than personal interaction. I still think there is a little bit of that. When we were growing up, that there were kids around us who were depressed. We just didn't know what to call it, And so in our center's been around since 68. And we've been doing a lot of work.
So there was demand back then, too.
So it's been there. But I do think we have new stressors that are impacting our kids related to social media, related to expectations for performance and achievement, related to some disconnectedness relating in a way that is different than we had to in the 70s, where we were calling on a landline, riding a bike to go see someone. So certainly that has an impact. I always say, though, that by investing in our kids, by being open to talking about mental health, by being focused on empowering and equipping, because we don't want people to become overly dependent. We don't want them to be dependent on professionals, but professionals can provide that objective expert guidance to really help people empower and equip them. But the stresses in the society around us, certainly they are different. But like I said, the hope is that people are more open to help, that we have quality healthcare providers, that access is there. Our therapists at the center with kids in particular, when you see them at our offices, they're happy and they're smiling and they've got strengths. We're just giving them some tools, some skills. We're helping parents kind of gain a different perspective in order to provide guidance, to embrace their authority as adults and as parents, but at the same time, nurture, teach discernment, build that confidence and resilience. As you can see, that's what we focus on.
And
I love talking about it.
The last thing I would ask you here, Dr. Swall, is for people who are hearing this and saying, listen, I know what I believe. What I believe is right 100%. I do not need, forget the people I don't talk to anymore and my family I don't talk to, but I don't need anybody to help me out at all. What would you tell them in the 4 months before the election?
Sure. So the help I'm talking about is if somebody's dealing with depression, you know, that low mood, thoughts of suicide, not necessarily, their belief. If somebody is struggling, that means that relationships are impacted. They're not doing the things that they normally want to do. There's no need to suffer. So to that person who has an opinion, there's nothing wrong with having an opinion and thinking you're right. The help is about mental health, relational issue. But the encouragement would be that we need to see people as people. There's a theologian that talks about I, thou, I, you, not me and it and you. It's not a person. So no matter what our beliefs, I think we do have to see people as people. And even if their opinions are vastly different from ours, have that respect. And if we do believe that we're right, then channel that to make an impact in the way that we believe the world needs to be. But that has to be done with respect, with peace, and constructively.
Are we going to make it through November, you think?
Yes. I have confidence. I've seen a lot of different things happen. It is very interesting, but we are going to make it. We are resilient. The hope is, and we saw that in the pandemic. I am an eternal optimist that we are able to change, we are able to transform, and I also believe that we can have a lot happening in our external world, but we can still have peace internally, and that's what we're focused on. So yeah, we can't control what's happening around us, but we can control how we view it, how we process it, and how we treat others.
Optimism's in short supply right now. I mean, I'm glad we have you on for this episode. I mean, do you think it is? Or?
Yes. Yeah.
I feel like it is.
I do. I think it is a difficult time, and we have been through a lot these years. But again, we think about the macro and the micro, and we think about what we can do to find what's positive around us.
Good deal. Dr. Brad Swall, he's the president and CEO of the Center for Integrative Counseling and Psychology. 45 therapists. There are offices all over North and Central Texas. Been around since
1968.
And how can people find you online?
So thecentercounseling.org.
The Center Counseling.
The Center Counseling. And that handle is the same for Facebook and Instagram. We do work to offer very practical tips. We do work to have that presence. So we are always seeking also partnerships with schools, businesses, faith communities, ways that we can be a direct resource, because the shorter we make that on-ramp to counseling, the more likely people will seek counseling. We also raise funds as a nonprofit to go into those areas of poverty. So that's always a message that we do want to share, that the funds that we garner from grants, foundations, individuals, goes to equip people to be resilient. But the Center Counseling, and we have a great staff that's here to help.
It's always good to stop and reflect about anything, but right now I think maybe more than ever, and your dose of optimism is badly needed. So thanks so much for that, Brad. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
And next time we see you as well, Wheeler will be back here.
That'd be great. Yeah, because we've had a lot of conversations about some tough stuff at the four, particularly the 4 o'clock news. So
yeah,
I'd love to be back.
All right, sounds good. Thanks so much. We appreciate you watching and listening as well. If you listen to us and don't watch us, you can find us on YouTube. You can watch there anytime, and of course, if you'd like to read about our episodes, since we just discussed that with Brad a moment ago, you can always find Yolitics by searching us on the web. We'll see you next week.
Okay, y'all, the conversation doesn't stop here. Find us on Twitter and Instagram. We're @Yolitics.